holding on to Samach Ches Amud Aleph, 13 lines from the top. My line begins late. Still in the middle of discussing the business about which machnos the various tmeim have to stay in and out of. So far, what we said was a mitzoda has to stay out of all three machnos, a zav and the other ones light and a zav and the other ones in that category. Good morning, Ellie. A zav and the other ones in that category, as well as a balkeri, have to stay out of two machnos. We said. And a tummy mess or tummy mess or tummy sheret only has to stay out of the one machna, the machna shchina. This, by the way, that we're saying over here. So we're saying over here that the balkeri is not allowed in that the balkeri is not allowed in both machnas. The truth is, it's actually not so simple. Maybe there are Rishonim who learn that actually they have different Girsois in the Gemara over here and have Girsois that maybe he actually is. But okay. Anyway, continuing where we were up to. So again, 13 lines from the top of Samach Ches Amud Aleph. Toni Tana Kamei Der Yitzchak Ba'Avrimi. When the Pasuk said, we've learned before a way how we knew that the Balkeri has to go out of two machnas is because we said since the Pasuk says Kol Zav, so we said it means not only the Zav himself, but also anybody who's similar to a Zav in that the Tumah comes out of his own body, as opposed to, we said, a Tmei Mes or a Tmei Sheret, where even though, in a certain sense, their Tumah is more severe. Well, in the case of a Tmei Mes, the Tumah is more severe because the Tumah lasts for 7 days, and he needs to be sprinkled with Parah Adumah water, as opposed to Balkeri is not. But because the Pasuk says Kol Zav, then therefore we learn from not only the Zav himself, but also the Balkeri. So now we have a different source for the same din. Toni Tana Kamei Rav Yitzchak Ba'Avrimi. The Pasuk says about the Balkeri, the Yotzel Mechutz Lamachne, he should go outside the Machne, and the Pasuk there is talking about a Balkeri, Zu Machne Shchina, so that refers to Machne Shchina, and when it says Lo Yovei Al Teich HaMachne, when it says he shouldn't come into the Machne, Zu Machne Leviya, then that means the Machne Leviya. The Gemara is going to explain soon how we know it's not just an Esa and a Lois Esa on the same thing, but anyway, so the Braisa says, Mikan La Balkeri, She Yetzi Chutz L'Shtei Machnes. From here we learn that a Balkeri has to be sent out of both Machne Shchina and Machne Leviya. Meaning, in other words, the Pasuk, in effect, is saying that if he became Tomei in the Azara, then he has to go out of those both, that he has to go out of both of those Machnes. Omalei, but Rav Yitzchak Barav Dimi tells him there's something wrong with the Loshen of the Braisa that you're quoting. Akati loy ayilte, you haven't even brought him into Machna Leviya yet, apikte, and you're already saying he has to go out. In other words, you're saying loy yovei al teich machna. So in other words, you're talking about he's outside Machna Leviya, and you're telling him not to come in. But if we're talking about a person who was standing in Machna Shchina, the only way for him to get out of Machna Shchina is by passing through Machna Leviya. In the Midbar, that's how it was. You had Machna Leviya surrounded the Mishkan. In Yerushalayim also, it was the same kind of thing. Machna Leviya, which is the Harabayis, surrounds the Azara. So there's no way to get from one without going through the other. So what are you telling me? If you're talking about, if the scenario that you're talking about is he's in the Azara, then how can you then what do you mean you're mentioning that he shouldn't go into Machna Leviya? Of necessity, he has to go into Machna Leviya in order to go out. So obviously you're talking about where he's standing outside Machna Leviya, outside the Hanabayas, and being told don't go in. Well, in that case, then why are you first mentioning Zu Machna Shchina? How is he supposed to get into Machna Shchina anyway if he can't even go into Machna Leviya? So you haven't even talked about bringing him in, and already you're talking about bringing him out. The Braisa seems backwards. Lishan Achrina, or another Loshan of what Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi told him, the other way around, Akati Lo Yapikde, you haven't yet brought him out, Ayilte, and you're already describing how he's going in. In other words, same idea that when you get to the Yotza Mechutz LaMachna, Zu Machna Shchina, you're telling him, you haven't yet gotten to the point of telling him he has to leave Machna Leviya. So how are you telling him already that, how are you talking already about him being inside there and then talking about that he has to leave Machna Shchina? So it amounts to the same thing. It's just two different ways of expressing the same thing. Ela, Ema, so rather what you have to say Sayeth the other way around, that when it says v'yotza mechutz l'machne refers to machne levia, when it says lo yave al teicha machne zu machne shchina. So in other words, now we can understand the braisa a little bit better. We're talking about he's in machne levia to begin with, and what we're telling him is when you're leaving machne levia, don't think that you can leave it and you can go into machne shchina. No, you actually have to go in the other direction, go outside of both of them, and go into Machne Yisrael, into Yerushalayim. Rashi explains, in other words, if it didn't have the two expressions Hamachne, then we would have said that okay, it means only one Machne. It means if he's standing in Machne Shechina, then he has to go out of it. But if he's standing in Machne Levia, then he can stay where it is. So now that we have that, it says twice in the Pasuk Machne, as we're going to say in a second, then that shows that it means that he has to go out of two Machnes. So in other words, in short, he's not allowed to go into Machne Levia at all, and certainly not into Machne Shechina. Maskif LaRavina, but Ravina asks on that. Ema Aidi V'Aidi LaMachne Shechina, who says maybe both of those statements are referring only to Machne Shechina, only to the Azara. V'Lava Ola Be'esev Eloi Seseh. And what the Pasuk wants you to know is that if the Baal Keri goes into Machne Shechina, then he's over on an Eser and a Lois Eser. He's over on, there's an Eser v'yotza al-mechutz ha-machna, that he's supposed to go out, and he didn't. And he's over on lo yovei al-teich ha-machna, that he shouldn't come in. We have many mitzvahs. We have an Eser and a Lav. Why don't we say the same thing over here? The answer is, in Cain, if that's all the Pasuk meant, that, if that's all the Pasuk meant, that, that we're going, that, if that's all the Pasuk meant, that it's going to be an Eser and a Lois Eser for the one Machne, Lemakra, then the Pasuk could have said, V'yotza mechutz ha-machne, V'lo yavoi el toich. The Pasuk didn't have to repeat the word ha-machne again. Because we know, obviously, once it says he should go out of the Machne, where else, what do we mean, where shouldn't he come into? The Machne, obviously. So it didn't have to repeat that. So by repeating that, ha-machne lomali, why does it have to repeat the word ha-machne? Shmamina litzalai matona machne acheres. Therefore, we learn from that that it means that he has to stay out of another machne. So not just machne shchina, but also machne levia. So he can't be in, so he can't be anywhere in the harabayis if he's a Baal Keri. Okay. So now turning to another point, the Mishnah had listed among the activities with the Korban Pesach that are Doicha Shabbos. We said one of them was Umichui Krov of Chula. We said the Michui of the Kishkis of the animal. Now we mentioned for contrast, we had Michui, and then on the other hand we had Hadochas Krov of, which means washing them. So the washing, we said, is not Doicha Shabbos, because you can leave it until after Shabbos. But the Michui Kravav, we said, is necessary in order to prevent them from spoiling. So obviously, Michui means something less than completely cleaning them. So what is it? My Michui Kravav. Rav Huna Omer Shemen Nachban Vesakin. Rav Huna says, part of the problem is also that the Shodesh Mocha has a lot of different meanings. It can mean to erase, it can mean to wipe, it can mean, and so on and so forth. So what does it mean over here? So Rav Huna Omer Shemen Nachban Vesakin. Rav Huna says it means that you pierce them with a knife. And that way, the waste that's inside them is able to come out. The point is, if you don't, then it's going to spoil before Shabbos is over. So how does the word michui come to mean cutting it open in that case? So Rashi has two explanations. Number one, the word michui we can understand as being related to one of the meanings of the Shodesh Mocha means to dissolve. So therefore it can refer to the waste that's dissolved inside the intestines of the animal. So you make a hole over there and it comes out, it pours out. It's easier to get it out that way. So you're making a hole for the purpose of getting out the dissolved substance, which would be one word, one meaning of michui. The other possibility is the Shodesh Mlacha can also mean to destroy, like Timchas Zecher Amalek. So it means you make a hole in it, and like in a certain sense you're destroying it. So same thing then. It means that you're doing that in order for the waste to come out. Rav Chiya Bar Rav Omer, on the other hand, Chiya Bar Rav says that no, it doesn't mean to get the actual waste out. It means shuka demeaya, means the mucus layer that's on the inside of the intestines. Denafka agav duchka desakina, it comes out when you press on it with a knife. So therefore, according to that, the word michui means the word michui means something disgusting. So therefore, it means you're allowed to remove the disgusting stuff. Which, by the way, it means therefore that chiyah barav is more makel than Rav Huna. Rav Huna is saying all you can do is get out the waste. You just make a hole in order for the waste to be able to come out, but that's it. Chiyah barav is allowing you to even not only take out the waste, but also to take out this mucus layer, which otherwise he figures that with that in there, still the intestines will spoil before Shabbos is over. So, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar, really, it's supposed to be. So, Rabbi Elazar says, "My time at the Chiyah Barav." What Rav Huna's reason we can understand. We just said that the Shodesh Macha has a couple of meanings. One of them means dissolved substance, which describes the waste. The other one is that it means destroy, which describes when you make a hole in the when you make holes in the intestines with a knife. But where is Rabbi Elazar getting the idea that michui means to take out something disgusting, namely the mucus? Dichtiv, because the pasuk says the chorvus meichim gorim yechelu. The chorvus, the wounds, meaning the ruined houses of meichim, of the disgusting ones, gorim yechelu. The ones who live temporarily will take them over. So where the Gemara says, my mashmal? So what does that pasuk mean, and what does that have to do with the michui over here? It means kedim etagrim Rabbi Yosef, as Rabbi Yosef teach the pasuk. You find it actually in Targum this is a pasuk from Yeshaya. You find it in Targum Yonason on the pasuk. The Gemara calls the Targum in many places by Rabbi Yosef's name because Rabbi Yosef was blind. He couldn't learn Torah Shabbosav because Torah Shabbosav has to be done from writing, and he didn't have that. So therefore, he specialized in the Targum, and therefore the Gemara often calls it by his name, even though he's not the one who wrote it. Anyway, so it was like he touched it, the property of the Rishoyim, Tzadikaya Yachsenun, the Tzadikim will take it over. In other words, therefore, so what we're understanding is the word mechim over here then means the disgusting ones, which now ties in with what Chiyah Barav is saying about michui, meaning to take out the disgusting mucus that's in the intestines. So the chorvus, the wounds, the ruined buildings that were left behind by the rishoyim, by the mechim, by the disgusting rishoyim, gorim, the ones who live in our world temporarily, meaning that tzaddikim, who have the mentality that they're not living in the world forever, they're only here for a period of time, and in general, also, the Jewish people who've been living for many years in the world as if we're just strangers, you know, never in one place permanently for very long, Yachsenun, they will inherit it. So Yechelu, they will consume it. In other words, Yachsenun, they will inherit it. So we see that the word Mechim means disgusting ones. Masha actually says a little bit different. Another meaning of the word Mechim, which we find in a number of places in Psukim, for example, in Tilim, Oilus Mechim Alaloch, the word Mechim means fat ones. So therefore, it's an appropriate name for the Rishoyim, who fatten themselves up on things that they take from other people. And he also was saying that the word michui krova means to take out this fatty mucus like stuff from inside the intestines. Okay. Yeah. Well, no, because we're talking about a korban over here. Ultimately, they have to be eaten, otherwise they're noiser. So you still want to make sure before Shabbos is over that they're going to be clean enough that if they wanted to eat them, they'd be able to without them being spoiled. If people don't want to eat them, then okay, what can you do? All right. So now that the Gemara, now that we explain the second, now that's the second half, this v'chorvus meichim gorim yechelu is the second half of a pasuk. So now the Gemara is going to talk about the first half of the pasuk. The pasuk says, v'ro chvasim kedavram, the sheep will pasture kedavram, the sheep representing the Jewish people. We have in a lot of places in Tanakh where the Jewish people are compared to sheep and the Eibishter is compared to the shepherd. So what does it mean, v'ro chvasim kedavram? But let's focus on the word kedavram. What does that mean? Amar Menashe by Yumi, Amar Rav, kimedubar bum. Means that the Jewish people will graze and pasture and then be comfortable like was told to them, like was said to them, kedavram meloshim dibur. Mefoshim on the pasuk explain the word kedavram. It means according to the usual way. One meaning of the Shodesh Dover means like leading a person or leading an animal or whatever in a certain way. But here the Gemara wants to darshan it meloshim dibur, meloshim speaking. Okay, so Maikim Dubobom. So what do we mean? What specific promise from the Navi all we say, all we referring to, Amar Abayah. Abayah says what it says in the end of the pasuk: "V'chorvus meichim godim yechelu." This that we just said, that the tzaddikim will end up taking over the nechasim of the rishonim. So now the whole pasuk is going that the sheep, meaning the Jewish people, will graze, will be comfortable, as was told to them by the Navi, that they will take over the property of the rishonim. But Amalei Rava, Rava says you can't understand the pasuk that way. Bishleima iksiv chorvos. If the second half of the pasuk didn't begin with a vav, if it said chorvos mechim, then you would say kidka amrit. Then it would be like what you're saying. The first half of it would be as if like after the first half of the pasuk there was a colon, and now you have after that it's explaining the second half of the pasuk is explaining how are they going to be kedavram, namely chorvos mechim gorim yechelu. But hashtag ksiv v'chorvos. But since the pasuk says and the chorvos, so that means milta achriti ka'amar, it must be that we're talking about something else. So these are two unrelated things. So the vero kvasim kedavram has to be referring to a different promise that the Nevi'im brought us from the Eibishter. What is it? Ella Amar Rava, so rather Rava says Kidura Chananel Amar Rav. Rather, we can say the promise that it's referring to in the first half of the pasuk is like what Rav Chananel explained in the name of Rav about a different promise that the Eibishter made for La'asid Lavi. The Amar of Chananel Amar Rav, Asidin Sadikim Shiyachayu as Amesim. In the future, the Tzaddikim will be able to be Mechaya Mesim. And how do we get that from these words v'ro kvasim kedavram? So we have like this ksiv hacha v'ro kvasim kedavram. Now we have here a pasuk that the sheep will graze v'ro uchtiv hasem. You have a different pasuk in the Navi Micha yiru boshen v'gilad kimei olam. Boshen and gilad will graze like they always did. Now pashat apshat means boshen and gilad are very fertile, are areas, are very grassy areas. That's why Bnei Reuven and Bnei Gad wanted them for their cattle. So the simple meaning of the pasuk would just mean, in other words, that the same way as it used to be that Jews lived there and grazed their cattle, that's how it'll be lost in lovely. But in particular, the psukim around that in Micha are talking about nisim that'll happen, la'asid lavoi. The next pasuk after that pasuk yiru boshen v'gilad kimei olam is pasuk yudalad of perek zayin of Micha. The next pasuk tesvav is kimei tseis chameretz mitzrayim aronu nuflois. So we're not stam talking about people being able to graze their sheep in these places. There has to be a deeper meaning. So we have to understand, what does the word boshan and gilad mean? Boshan, ze elisha habamina boshan. The word boshan in this pasuk refers to Elisha, who originally came from Boshan. And we know that in turn by putting together a couple of psukim. Shenem of a yanai v'shofat ba'boshan. In Divrei Hayomim, when it lists the major families of Shevet Gad, it mentions Yanai and Shofat, who lived in Boshan, which was the area where Shevet Gad lived. So it mentions this family of Shofat. Uchtiv, and you have a different pasuk. Poya Elisha ben Shofat asher yotzak mayim aydei Eliyahu. During that war involving the king of Yisrael and of Yehuda and of Edom that we talked about the other day, when Elisha got angry, so the pasuk a few psukim earlier, it says that they said, here is Elisha ben Shofat who poured water on the hands of Eliyahu, meaning that he was Meshamesh Tamar Chacham. He learned and served under Eliyahu, and therefore we can ask him for a nevuah and for a bracha for water. The point is, in other words, he's called Elisha ben Shofat. So the Gemara is connecting that with the Shofat who lived in Boshan. So therefore, we see that Elisha came from Boshan. Nowadays the Boshan is more or less what's called the Golan Heights. The Gilad is nowadays in Jordan. Boshan is at least part of it is in what's now the Golan Heights. Part of it is in Syria. Yeah. So yeah, it's a good land. Yeah, yeah. Gilad Zeliyo. Then when the pasuk mentions Gilad, that refers to Eliyo. Shenemer vayomer Eliyo atish b'miteshav veGilad v'gamer. When Eliyo is first introduced, he's introduced as one of the residents of Gilad. So now putting all this together, we have like this. Therefore, so the Navi Micha is telling us that Yiru Boshan Vigilad Kimei Olam, that there's going to be something special that they, the rest of the tzaddikim among the Jewish people, are going to be like Boshan and Gilad in old times, namely where Boshan and Gilad, Elisha and Eliyahu, were both Mechaya Mesim, Elisha with the Ben Ashunamis, Eliyahu with the Ben Atzophasis, they were both Mechaya Mesim. So therefore, now when the pasuk is telling us, V'ro Kvasim Kedavram, that the sheep, meaning the tzaddikim of the Jewish people, will V'ro, like they were told, that means that tzaddikim in the times of Mashiach will have that power as well to be Mechaya Mesim. Marshall points out, by the way, why are we hinting at Eliyahu and Elisha by the names of the places they came from, why not just say straight out Elisha and Eliyahu? Why call them Boshan and Dilon? So he says, very interesting idea. We know that the Mesim who live in Eretz Yisrael, who lived and then passed away and are buried in Eretz Yisrael proper, are going to have an easy Trias Mesim, whereas the ones from outside Eretz Yisrael are going to have to roll through tunnels over there or whatever. So therefore, we're stressing over here Boshan and Gilad. Even though those are outside Eretz Yisrael proper, nevertheless, the Mesim who live in those places will have the source of Trias Mesim through Tzadikim of the caliber of Eliyahu and Elisha. Well, also love everybody's going to have Trias HaMesim, but you do have an idea that it says that there are certain people who will have Trias HaMesim first. So then the idea can be that in that time, then the Tzadikim will already have that power, yeah. Maybe also what the Gemara means is you might have some people where, in principle, maybe they shouldn't deserve Trias HaMesim. For example, in Sanhedrin, right, you have people who denied Trias HaMesim or said it's Einei Min HaTorah or whatever. Maybe the Gemara is saying that nevertheless, the Tzadikim will have the ability to overcome that and get them Trias HaMesim anyway. Okay. Amr of Shmuel by Nachmeni, Amr of Yenison. So now Rav Shmuel by Nachmeni says in the name of Rav Yenison, we have a different way of learning that the tzaddikim in the future will be able to be Mechai Mason. Asidim tzaddikim sheichayu Mason. Shenemar, you have a different nevuah in the Navi Zechariah, says, Oid Yeshvu Zekenim Uzkenes Berchoves Yerushalayim. Old men and women will yet in the future sit in the streets of Yerushalayim. The Ish Mishante Biyodei Merev Yamim. Each person will have his staff, his walking stick, in his hand because they're so old. Now, what's the point of the walking stick? First of all, Maharshal points out, if they're sitting, they don't need a walking stick anyway. And second of all, why first it's saying, Zkenim was Zkenois, so why all of a sudden is it mentioning in the singular, the Ish Mishantoi? It should say Mishanois Sam Biyadam or something. So therefore, we can douse in that the stick we're talking about over here is a special stick. Uchtiv v'samta mishanti al pnei anor. When Elisha wanted to be Mechaya Mesim, the Ben Ashunamis, so he sends Gehazi with a staff and tells him put the staff on the baby on the boy's face and he'll have Tchias Mesim. In the event that didn't happen because Gehazi messed up because instead he's going and telling everybody on the way, etc. But the principle was that Elisha's staff had the ability to be Mechaya Mason. No, there wasn't water on the way. No. The point is, in other words, no, what is water? No. The point is that Elisha had told him that if anybody speaks to you, don't answer them. If anybody greets you, don't answer them, etc. And he didn't do that. The Medrash says that actually, where as he's going along, he's talking to everybody he sees and even making fun. Ha, my Rebbe sent me with the stick to be Mechaya Mason. So of course, by the time he brought it there, nothing's doing. But the point is, the principle was sound, though, that Elisha's stick has the ability to be Mechaya Mason. So if now we're saying in the Nevuah that in the future, we're talking about that kind of stick that is able to be Mechaya Mason. So we see again that we're saying that they'll have the power to do that. Okay. All right. In this connection, the Gemara points out, Ula Rami, Ula pointed out a contradiction between two psukim. Ksiv Bilam Mavas Lanetzach. You have a pasuk that says that Limoisa Mashiach, the Malach HaMavas, will be swallowed up and won't have any effect anymore. Uchtiv Kianar Ben Meir Shana Yomos. On the other hand, a different pasuk says that a young man will die as 100 years old. In other words, what's going to happen is, if Limoisa Mashiach, people will live so long that if a person dies at 100, people will baklogzich, people will mourn over him. Look at how he died so young, he was only 100. So you see that people will die. The answer is like Kasha, can be Yisro, can be Akum. One's talking about the Jews, one's talking about the Goyim. So the Jews will live forever, Bila Hamavas Lanetzach. The Goyim will live much longer than they do now, but still they will eventually die. So the question is, we're talking Limoisa Mashiach. We're talking Lasid Love. What are the Goyim doing there in the first place? Why are they sharing in the good times of Lasid Love? The answer is Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, Ba'omdu Zorim Vero Utsayim, strangers will stand and pasture your sheep. Uvnei Necho Ikarechem Vekarmechem, the people from foreign nations will be your plowmen and the ones who take care of your vines. So in other words, there's going to be work that needs to be done. There's going to be agricultural and whatever work that needs to be done. L'asid lavay, we're going to be learning Torah. Lo ye'esek kol ha'olam el ladas Hashem bilvad, as the Rambam writes. So somebody has to keep things running. So that's going to be goyim who are going to volunteer to do that. So therefore, there are going to be goyim then, and those goyim are going to be on a higher level. So therefore, they'll live longer, but they're still not the Jewish people, and therefore, they're not going to live forever. So we're talking about the Pashtus. We're talking about the good goyim, in other words, the ones who are the chassidim asolim, the ones who are volunteering to help. That they're going to do the gashmiyistic work while we can fartifzich in Torah. But so they'll have it's still going to be the world of Mashiach. They'll be much better off than they are now, but they're still subject to teva ultimately, and therefore yeah. So in this connection also, Rav Chista Rami, Rav Chista pointed out a contradiction between Pesukim. Ksiv v'chofra levono v'osha achama. One pasuk says about Yemos HaMashiach that the moon will be ashamed and the sun will be embarrassed, meaning that they're not going to shine at all. Or in a different place, I think, in a different place it actually explains, means they'll shine, but like very dimly. Uchtiv v'hoya or halavono ka'or achama, but a different pasuk says, also in Yeshaya, says, the light of the moon will be like the light of the sun is now. The light of the sun will be 7 times 7, which is 49 times as intense. And like the light of the 7 days, which means, in other words, Rashi says, you consider the amount of energy, the amount of light that comes out of the sun in 7 days, now multiply that by 49, shivasayim, means 7 times 7, and all of that is going to be in 1 day. So the sun's light and energy is going to be 343 times more intense than it is now. You have the famous thing that it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be motzi chama minautika, will take the sun out of its sheath, and the Rishayim will be burnt up, and the Tzaddikim will benefit from it. So in other words, so what are we talking about? So is it that the moon and the sun won't be shining b'chlal, l'mos HaMashiach, or that they'll be shining only very dimly, or is it on the contrary, because they'll be eclipsed by the light of the Shechina, or are we saying that they're going to be shining even more brightly than they are now? So the answer is like Kasha, Kan la Olam Haba, Kan li Moshe Mashiach. One's talking about Olam Haba, one's talking about the time of Mashiach. So in the time of Mashiach, the sun and the moon will shine brighter than they are now. Olam Haba, they won't exist at all. All that's going to be is the light of the Shechina. Now what is Olam Haba in this context? So you have the famous machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban on this, where the Rambam holds that Olam Haba means the world of Neshamas. So he says it refers to what we talk, when we talk about now, after 120, a person goes to Olam Haba. He says that's what we're referring to over here. Then he says, what's going to happen, L'Mos HaMashiach, is there's going to be Tchias HaMesim, there's going to be Yemos HaMashiach, all the good times that we talk about in Nevi'im and in Gemara's in various places. Eventually, though, even those people are going to die, and then they're going to have Olam Haba, the world of Neshamas. So there's going to be a point when there's a world of only Neshamas. That's how the Rambam learns. The Beis Hamikdash gets built during Yemos HaMashiach. But the Ramban disagrees with that. The Ramban disagrees with that. He says that no, yes, Olam Haba means Gan Eden, where Neshamas go now, but it also means that after Tchias HaMesim and after Yemos HaMashiach, the bodies are going to stay, the Neshamas are going to stay in bodies, the bodies themselves are going to be on a much higher level than they are now. So there's not going to be a time when they have to die and there's only a world of Neshamas. In Chassidus, it talks about in many places, like the Ramban Shita. So therefore, so you have, there's Yemos HaMashiach, there's the first stage where the Tzchias HaMesim, the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, Shibud Golias ends, etc. And then Olam Haba is within that. You don't have where the Neshamas have to leave the bodies. The Neshamas stay in the bodies, but you have a tremendous Gilui Shechina that you don't have now with Neshamas in bodies. Chassidus talks about that. The Ramban's explanation of it is the correct one.
How can the Rambam say that Mashiach time will be as man of Neshamas in one place, and in another place he says, we don't know exactly what's going to happen at the time of Mashiach?
What the Rambam says is like this. He says, as far as the procedure, how it's going to happen, how exactly Mashiach is going to come, like what the order of things is, whether Eliyahu is going to come before Mashiach or after him, for example, he says we don't know those details. But in a general way, he talks about in Hilchos Teshuvah and in Hilchos Malachim and in some other places, he talks about, again, you have, for example, you have a Gemara in Brachas that says that Olam Haba, there's no eating and drinking in it and so on and so forth. Tzaddikim sit over there and enjoy the Ziv HaShechina. So he understands that, therefore, that there has to come a point. So he understands, therefore, that Yemos HaMashiach, Neshamas in bodies, is not the ultimate tzar, because there has to come a point when there's Ein Bo Lo Yachil Lo Shia, and we're just living off Ziv HaShechina. So therefore, he understands that it means that there has to come a point when there's when there's neshamas without bodies after Yemosa Mashiach. So yeah, he's saying that you
so
don't
what,
know the
so
details.
What did he say?
One second. So he's saying we don't know the details means we don't know the details of what the procedure is going to be, what the process is going to be, how Mashiach is going to come. But after he comes, yeah, we can talk in a general way about how this order of things is going to be.
But he says clearly in one place, we don't know what's going to happen. In another place,
no, he says clearly in one place, we don't know how it's going to have the process that's going to lead to Mashiach coming. For example, Eliyahu coming before or after it, we don't know that level of detail. That's not the same thing as saying we don't know what's going to happen after that. Not the same thing at all. Okay, let's go on.
What's the difference?
The difference, what do you mean, what's the difference? One is before Mashiach comes and one is after Mashiach comes. He's saying, as far as what happens before Mashiach comes, whether Eliyahu comes first or Mashiach comes first, for example, we don't know. But what we can talk about, we know, based on the Psukim and based on the Gemaras, or based on his analysis of the relevant Gemaras, that it means there's going to be this certain order. There's going to be Yemosa Mashiach, and then later on after that, there's going to be, a world of Neshamas only without bodies. Okay. So the question, so the Gemara over here, and in fact, the Ramban uses this Gemara as one of the proofs against the Rambam that we see over here, if Olam Abba means a world of only Neshamas, it means the world of Neshamas that exists now, then of course there's no sun and moon, and it's a Ruchniistic world. Only if you talk about that La'asid Lavoi, there is a time after Yemosa Mashiach when there still exists a Gashmiistic world, and we live as Neshamas in bodies, but with a much higher level of Gilui Elokus, then it makes sense to talk about at that point there's no, the physical sun and moon don't need to shine, even though the physical world still exists. Okay, so the question is, well, the Shmuel D'Amar Ein Beina Olam Hazeh V'Mosa Mashiach Ela Shibud Malchus Lovad. What about according to Shmuel's Shvita, that the whole difference between nowadays and Yemosa Mashiach is only that we won't be subjugated by the Goyim. So according to him, there's no particular changes in Teva in Mashiach's times. And in fact, the Rambam learns like that. The Rambam learns that the Rambam writes. Like Shmuel, Ein Beina Olam Hazeh V'Mosa Mashiach Ela Shibud Malchus Lovad. So people will still be born, people will still die, the moon and the sun will still be exactly as they are now, etc., etc. So according to the Rambam, according to Shmuel, rather, my Ikolamemar, then how do you reconcile these psukim, that one says the sun and the moon won't shine at all, or will shine only very dimly, and another one says they'll shine much more intensely than they do now? So he would say, Aidi la'olam haba, both of them are talking in olam haba, v'lekashe, kan b'machne shchina, kan b'machne tzaddikim. You have the camp, the area of the Shechina, where there the sun and the moon won't shine at all because they'll be eclipsed by the brightness of the Ziva Shechina. And then you have in Machne Tzadikim, which is a bit of a lower level, not quite as close to Elokus. So there's going to be a sun and a moon, and they'll shine more brightly. Gilui Nashas over here refers to a Yalkut Shimoni on a Pasuk in Tehillim that mentions that there are seven different levels of closeness to the Eibishter, La'asid Lavoi. So you have, there's one level which is Machne Shechina, and then you have the next lower level is Machne Tzadikin. Okay. I mean, we have, you know, keep in mind, of course, even though it's only one level away, it's like, you know, when we talk in Chassidus about the difference between Atzilus and Bria, or between Yetzirah and Asiyah, you know, it's not just one level away, it's a quantum jump, it's a whole different kind of Metzius. So yeah. Okay. Rava pointed out another contradiction in Psukim. Ksiv, you have at the end of the Shira of Hazinu, Ani Omis Vachaya, the Eibishter says, I kill and I make alive. And then it continues, and the same post continues, Machatzti Vani Erpa, I wound and I'm the one who heals. So the contradiction is, why does it need to mention in that second one? Hasha Achuye Mechaye, if the Eibishter is telling us that he can bring the dead alive, Mirape Lekoshken, how much more so he can heal them, so why even bother mentioning the second one? Ela, Omar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Masha, Ani Memis, Ani Mechaya. What it means is the Eibishter is saying like this. When I say that I kill and I make alive, don't think it means, okay, some people die and then other people are born, which is the derech of the world. No, what it means is the same ones that I killed are the same ones that I'm going to bring alive. Just like the same ones that I wound are the same ones who get healed. Obviously, you can't say a person can't be healed unless they were first wounded. So therefore, they're putting them together. And the Pasuk is teaching us that the same way as those refer to the same person, the same way that Ani Omis V'Achaya also refers to the same person. So in other words, it's talking about Tchitza Mason. So in fact, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, saying just that. And when the pasuk says ani omis v'chaya, when the Ebeshe says I kill and I make alive, yochol misa be'echad v'chayim be'echad k'derech sha'olam noyeg, you would think it just means okay, some people are die, some people are born, the same way as the world has always worked. No, tamad loyma machatz ivani erpa. Therefore, the pasuk continues, I wound and I heal. So ma mako refor be'echad. Just like wounding and healing obviously refer to the same person, because a person can't be healed unless they were first wounded. Af misa v'chayim be'echad. The same way, the death and the life that we're talking about are in one person. Here is a refutation of those who would claim that Tchias HaMesim is not in the Torah, because you see this also can't be understood any other way unless you realize it refers to Tchias HaMesim. Dover Acher, another explanation, another way of understanding why it puts them in that order. So why doesn't it put them in the opposite order? I wound and I heal, I kill and I make alive. Because Batchila Mashani Memis Ani Michaya, the Ebeshter is saying, first the ones who I killed, I'm going to bring alive. Batchias Mesim Vahoder, and after that Masha Machatzi Vani Erpa. After that, the ones that I wounded, I will heal. Because as we know, the Mesim are going to first rise up in Tchias Mesim with all the mumim and with all the physical defects and problems that they had when they were alive, then the Eibishter will heal them. So therefore, so it's in that order. First Almas and Vachaya, and then Machatzi, while they were alive, I struck them with various illnesses and whatever, and now Vanierpa. Why Taka is it that way? Why doesn't the Eibishter, as long as the Eibishter is reconstituting the body, why not to begin with reconstituted healthy? The Medrash says on it, because you don't want people to claim these are other people. You want them to be able to recognize these are the very same people who died, and then after that they'll see a further nest of how those people are then healed. That's the point. In other words, you have, let's say, for example, you know that before a certain person passed away, he was missing an arm. So now if he comes back to begin with two arms, that you could have some people are going to claim, it's not Tchias HaMesim, it's a different person who happens to look the same. Like this, if he comes back with a missing arm and then it grows back, then they realize then there's nothing that they can deny. And that's over an S, yeah. The Mishnah continued, v'hekter chalava v'chola. Another thing of the Korban Pesach, which we say you do even on Shabbos, is burning the fats of the Korban. So Tanya Omer Reb Shimon, boyer e kam chaviva mitzvah v'shaita, come see from this how precious is a mitzvah when it's done in its right time. After all, in principle, you could burn all these fats and limbs of various korbanos that need to be burned, and pedorim, the peder is also a sheet of fat that's draped over the head of the animal, whatever it is. All of that is kshedim kol alayla. It could be done all night, so they could, in principle, wait until after Shabbos. But still, we don't do that. We wait. We do it right away. We don't wait for them till it gets dark. We do it right away there on Shabbos afternoon, showing that chaviv mitzvah shaita. Now, I mean, this chaviv mitzvah shaita doesn't apply across the board, of course. I mean, if we weren't doicha Shabbos for the Korban Pesach, we wouldn't say chaviv mitzvah shaita. But once we're ready doicha Shabbos for the shechting of the Korban Pesach, then we can do this as well, rather than waiting until Motzei Shabbos, given that it is, after all, something directly with the Korban, and it is tzorech gavoya, it is something needed for the mizbeach, for the kodshim part of it. That we said in the Mishnah, for example, that let's say the roasting of it is not doicha Shabbos, because that's not tzorech gavoya anymore. That's tzorech Hedya. You need to be able to eat the meat, and you need to eat it roasted. So that's not Doicha Shabbos. But we're talking about the parts that go on the mizbeach, right? A couple of sheets of fat from the inside of the animal, the kidneys, the tail, if it's a sheet, etc. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Then we said in the Mishnah how kavose baba osechula. Now, then we listed in the Mishnah a few different things regarding the Korban Pesach that are not Doicha Shabbos, even though they're only also drabanon. So we mentioned, for example, carrying it on his shoulder. So even if we say chai noise etzatzmoi, that a living creature helps carry itself, so therefore it's not a melacha daraisa, or bringing it from outside the tchum, which is also only drabanon. Another example we mentioned was cutting off a wart. Which is a wart would be a mum, so you need to cut it off. Now we're talking about not cutting it off with a keli, we're talking about taking it off with his hands or biting it off or whatever. So that would be also drabanan, because the shinui, nevertheless, we're still saying that it's not doicha Shabbos, because again, these are things that could have been done before Shabbos. Or even if we talked about the other day, what happens if the wart actually grew on Shabbos, nevertheless, we would still say that it's the kind of thing that can be done before Shabbos. So the concept of taking off warts from the animal can be done before Shabbos, therefore even though this particular one happened to grow on Shabbos, you still don't have a heker for it. Now, the Gemara says, Oraminu, I have a contradiction to that. We learned at the end of Eruvin, Choskin Yabelas Famikdash, you're allowed to remove a wart from an animal on in the Bismikdash on Shabbos, because Ein Shavus Famikdash, Ava Loid Bamedina, but not anywhere else in the country. The imbikli kan v'kan also. But if this is if you're doing it by hand, if you're doing it with a keli, if you're doing it with a knife, then either way it's also. So how do you understand? So here we're saying you can't remove the wart, and there we're saying you could. Because they already it's an issur d'oraisa to do it with a knife, but that's what we have to figure out. So Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina. Now Rashi points out, according to Rabbi Eliezer in our Mishnah, who says machshire mitzvah are doicha Shabbos, then yes, he would say even malachas d'oraisa. We learned in Shabbos, for example, that Rabbi Eliezer would allow you to carry a knife through Rosh Hashanah for the milah, or even to make a knife on Shabbos if you need. But the Gemara doesn't want to say over here that the Mishnah in Eruvin could be according to Rabbi Eliezer and our Mishnah would be according to the Chachamim. That's not going to work because according to Rabbi Eliezer you should be allowed with a knife. So if the Mishnah there was telling us with a knife you can't, then obviously that has to be according to the Chachamim. So even the Chachamim themselves are sometimes allowing you to remove a wart and sometimes not. So what's the distinction? So Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina. So Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina argue how to reconcile the two Mishnayos. Chad Amar Aidi v'Aidi v'Yad. One says that in both Mishnayos, both here and in Eruvin, it's talking about removing it by hand. But Habalacha Habayevesha. But our Mishnah is talking about where it's a moist wart, a fresh wart, which is therefore it's considered part of the skin. So to remove it would be an Isu de Rabbanon. The one in Eruvin is talking about a dry one where there's not even a Shavus. There's not even an Isu de Rabbanon. So therefore, fine. In the Medina, we still don't want you to do it because once you do a dry one, you might come to do a moist one as well. But in the Beis Mikdash, we were not gozer on Shavus, then we're not worried about that. The Chad Omer, the other one says, Aidi v'Aidi v'Lacha. Both of them are talking about a fresh one. The difference is, the Mishnah in Eruvin over there is telling you that you can take it off by hand. Our Mishnah is telling you you can't take it off the Kli, which therefore exactly matches what it says over there, in the Kli, kan v'kan also. So the Gemara says, now why do we have two different explanations? Ulamanda Omer hobi yad hobi Kli, my time alay Omer aidi v'aidi v'yad, like kasha hobi lacha hobi yavesha. With the Manda Omer who explains that we're talking about by hand versus a Kli, why doesn't he like the explanation that there we're talking about a dry one and here we're talking about a fresh one? The answer is Amalach, because I'll answer you, Yevesha Mifrach Pricha. A dry one is just going to crumble away anyway. You can't really call that cutting away. So even if you did it with a keli, it would be mutter because it's dry anyway. It's not really part of the skin anymore. So obviously, therefore, if the Mishnah there in Eruvin is telling us that you can't do it with a keli, it can't be talking about a dry one. So the only thing that's left, therefore, is to say that we're talking about a fresh one in both cases, and there it's saying you can remove it by hand in the Beis Mikdash because Ein Shavus v'Mikdash. Whereas here we're talking about doing it with a keli, and that would be a malacha d'oraisa, and you can't do that. Okay, Ulamanda Omo Aidi Aidi Yad Velakasha Hobalaka Hobyavesha. Okay, the other Manda Omo who says both of them are talking about by hand and one's talking about a fresh one and the other's talking about a dry one. My time Omo Aidi Aidi Balacha Velakasha Hobyadovakli. Why doesn't he like the explanation that there we're talking about doing it by hand and here we're talking about doing it with a knife? So the answer is Amalach, because he'll tell you, what do you mean? Why should it need to mention in our Mishnah anything about doing it with a Keli? Kli Hokatani Hasam. It says right there in the Mishnah in Eruvin, Imbikli Kan Vakan Osir, that if it was with a Keli, in both cases it's Osir, so there's no reason for our Mishnah to repeat that. So it must be our Mishnah is telling us a Chiddush over the one over there. Namely, over there we were talking about a dry one, and here we're talking about a fresh one, and saying that there's a further issue in it, which we didn't learn about in Eruvin. The Idach, so what would the other Manda Amar answer? He would say there is a Chiddush in our Mishnah, even if you say it's telling us that you can't use a Keli. Hodechatoni Kli Hocha, the fact that it mentions over here about a Keli, plugged to Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, also Ashminen, because it wants to inform us that you should know that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua argue about it. The Mishnah in Eruvin over there doesn't mention anything about that Machlokas. So now, in our Mishnah, the Tana wants us to know that you should know this that we're saying, that you can't use a knife to cut it off when it's fresh. Rabbi Yeshua would say that. Or not when it's fresh. that he would say that, yeah, both of them are talking about where it's fresh. One's by hand, one's with a keli. Why is our Mishnah repeating the fact that you can't do it with a keli, even though it already said it in Eidavin? Because from the Mishnah in Eidavin, we wouldn't know that Rabbi Eliezer disagrees. That the Tana of our Mishnah wanted you to know that Rabbi Eliezer disagrees and says even a fresh one and even with a keli you could do on Shabbos, because he says that machshir mitzvah are doicha Shabbos. Okay. The Rambam paskens like the second opinion, so it means, in other words, that even in the Bais Mikdash you can't cut it off with a keli. On the other hand, a dry one you could crumble off and there's not a problem. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Omer Rabbi Eliezer, Umayim Shchita v'chola. So Rabbi Eliezer had argued again that machshirei mitzvah are doicha Shabbos. So Rabbi Eliezer had argued all those things that you said in the Mishnah that you're not allowed to do, the carrying it, the bringing it from outside the tchum, etc. He says you are allowed to, and he makes a kavachoymer. He says if even shchita, which is a malacha daraisa, we're still doing on Shabbos, how much more so these things which are only dirabbanan? Well, no. Bringing it from outside the tchum, for example, is not in the mikdash. It's bringing it to the mikdash. Right. But in other words, Rabbi Eliezer is saying this, that you're saying that the rabbanans are also to make the korban pesach ready to bring. I would say that no, and in fact, I have a kavach chomer that if we're allowed to even shecht it, how much more so we should be allowed to do these things, the rabbanan. So then in the Mishnah of Yeshua argues and says, no, one second, what about on Yom Tov? You're allowed to do certain malachas daraisa on Yom Tov, malachas eichel nefesh, but you're still not allowed to do drabanans. And Rabbi Eliezer says to Rabbi Yeshua, what kind of a comparison is that? There you're talking about for a dvar reshus, you're talking about for something optional, to eat a Yom Tov meal, which is not a requirement. Here we're talking about mitzvah to bring, here we're talking about a requirement to bring the Korban Pesach, so it's not the same thing at all. So the Gemara continues. So now, what would Rabbi Yeshua answer to that? The answer is, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yeshua, the time may, Rabbi Yeshua would say, is saying that I'm going according to my own svara, Dama Simchas Yom Tov Nami Mitzvah. He says, Simchas Yom Tov is also a mitzvah. So therefore, it's a good comparison. You're allowing Malachas Daraisa for Simchas Yom Tov, but you're not allowing certain Dirabbanans. The same thing when it comes to the mitzvah of the Korban Pesach, same idea. And again, the rule would be that it depends whether it's something that could have been done before Yom Tov or not. When we learn the Sechta Beitz, Beis Hashem, for a few months from now, we're going to talk about those kinds of details. What kinds of malachas, daraisa or darabonon, are you allowed to do on Yom Tov because you couldn't have done them before Yom Tov, or at least not without it deteriorating, versus which ones you have to have done before Yom Tov, and if you didn't, then tough luck. Okay. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Eliezer, Ein loy la'odem biyamtiv ela oy oichu v'shoisa oy yoshev v'shoina. On yamtiv, there's only one of two choices: either you eat and drink the whole day, or you sit and learn the whole day. As we're going to explain in a second why he says that. Rabbi Yeshua, I'm a chalteu. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, you divide up the day. Half of it for eating and drinking and half of it for the Beis Medrash. Whether it means literally half, 50%, or whether it just means part for one or part for the other, you have different posts can talk about that. Anyway, the Amar Rabbi Yechanan, so Rabbi Yechanan says, both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are getting their shittis from the same posse. Namely, you have like this, actually, two different psukim. One posuk says about Shvi Shal Pesach that it should be an atzeres, a holding back for Hashem, which means that the day should be devoted completely to Hashem, to davening and learning. A different posuk about Shmini Atzeres says that it should be an atzeres for you, implying that it should be for your enjoyment, for eating and drinking. Now, okay, there are two different Yom Tovim, but still, there's no reason to assume that Shvi Shal Pesach and Shmini Atzeres should have different rules. They're both Yom Tovim. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer Sava, so Rabbi Eliezer says that what it is the psukim are giving you a choice. Oy kula lachem, oy kula lachem. It's one or the other. Either it's completely for Hashem or completely lachem. So either you can follow either one pasuk or the other. Rabbi Yeshua says you have to go. You have to put together both psukim. So therefore, okay, you divide it. Chetzi l'Hashem, chetzi l'Hashem. So half of it is for Hashem for davening and learning, and half of it is l'Hashem. Okay, so the point is, in other words, so according to Rabbi Eliezer, Simchas Yom Tov, the eating of a meal on Yom Tov, is Rishus. It's not required. So therefore, he can be arguing against Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah that you're bringing a proof from the halachas of Yom Tov, but there it's for Rishus. Here we're talking about for the Korban Pesach, which is a mitzvah. And Rabbi Yeshua will counter that, no, according to me, as a matter of fact, Simchas Yom Tov is a choiva. You are obligated in it for half the day, just like you're obligated in the Korban Pesach. So therefore, it's a good comparison. Okay. So the Gemara... So he says that Lashem applies to both of them, and Lachem applies to both of them. You have to have half of one, half of the other, yeah. So the Gemara says, Abam Simen. The Simen over here is one way of understanding is that the Mem should actually be a Samach, and then it refers to the names of the Amoroyim we're going to quote, Reb El-Ozer, the Ayin of El-Ozer, the Beis of Rabbah, and the Samach of Reb Yosef, that we're going to quote. The other possibility is that it's key letters from the names of the Yom Tovim that we're going to talk about. Atzeres, which is Shavuos, Shabbos, the Beis of Shabbos, and the Mem of Purim. So it's a simon for the Yom Tovim or for the names of the Amoroyim. Anyway, Amar Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar says, "Hakol moedim ba'atzeres to be in a nami lachem." Everybody agrees when it comes to Shavuos. Even Rabbi Eliezer would agree that you do need lachem, that you do need lachem on it, that you do need to have part of the day set aside for eating and drinking. Meaning, Rashi says the reason is because that was the day we received the Torah. You have to be besimcha on that day with eating and drinking in order to demonstrate that you appreciate the fact that we received the Torah. You shouldn't look at it, oh, you know, such a burden, we received it, and I'm not going to bother celebrating it. No, you have to celebrate it. My time of Yom Shenitna by Torah, because the day that the Torah was given, and therefore you have to demonstrate that you're happy with that by eating and drinking and feasting. Which, by the way, Tosfos points out, in that case, then we're back to, so what's Rabbi Eliezer slogging up Rabbi Yeshua's proof in the Mishnah? So he says, okay, because maybe we could say, since Rabbi Eliezer, even Rabbi Eliezer would say that, fine, you have to on Shavuos, but it's not based on a posik, it's only based on Svara, so it's a weaker kind of thing. It's maybe only Drabbanan that you need to. Maybe Daraisi you wouldn't be required to. Okay. Amar Rabbah, Hakol Moedim B'Shabbos to be in a Nami Lachem. Rabbah says, everybody agrees when it comes to Shabbos that you need also Lachem. You can't spend the whole day learning. My time of a Karosel Shabbos owning. Because the Pasuk says you should call Shabbos a delight, and that means that you have to delight in Shabbos by eating good food. Amar Rabbi Yosef, Hakol Moedim B'Purim to be in a Nami Lachem. And Rabbi Yosef says, everybody agrees by Purim that we also require Lachem. My time, you may mention of a Simcha Ksivbe, because after all, it says by it that they have to be days of Purim, your Dalet and Tesvav, respectively, have to be days of feasting and Simcha, so therefore you have to actually eat. No, that's what we're saying. That smishta means eating. So therefore, on Purim, you definitely need lachem. Even Rabbi Eliezer, who's saying that a Yom Tov could be only lachem, he agrees that on Purim, you have to have lachem in there. Yeah. This that we're saying, by the way, so for Shabbos and for Shabbos and for Purim, we're bringing psukim. For Shavuos, we're not bringing a posik. We're just saying the svara, that it's Yom Shenitna b'Torah. There's a couple of sichas where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind it. Given that the Torah was given down here, l'mata ma'asara tfachim, to neshamas in bodies, therefore we have to demonstrate on the day, it's not just like Rashi is saying over here, we have to demonstrate that we're happy with receiving the Torah. It's also the whole point of the Torah is to be mevara of the world. Therefore, even Rabbi Eliezer would agree that we have to eat on that day in order to be mevara, in order to be mevara of the world. Okay, so the Gemara continues. My brother in this connection about was saying that there were these days when you're not allowed, when you have to daft to eat. So my brother of in a cooler shot to have a Yosef Tanisa, he would fast throughout the entire year, and we'll talk about in a second what that means. Levame Atzarta, with the exception of Shavuos, as we just said, you have to eat on Shavuos, Upuya and Purim, same thing. And the third one that he made an exception was Umala Yom Kippur. The third one he made an exception was Erev Yom Kippur. Now, what do we mean by this? So you have a lot of different opinions among the Rishonim. What's going on over here? The major question that we have is: we're saying that he fasted throughout the whole year. So does that mean he fasted on Shabbos? We just said Shabbos, you have to eat as well. So there's a lot of different explanations. One explanation is we don't mean that he fasted on Shabbos. We mean that the Bala Mur starts talking about that you have various kinds of fasts, he says. A person is fasting because of something sad, like, for example, the fast that we have Shavuos and Tammuz and Tisha B'Av and the rest of that group. Sometimes you have fasts where a person is fasting because he forgot to eat. He's too busy learning or working or whatever and forgot to eat. And then you have fasts that a person is doing for Tshuva. So he distinguishes, and within that you also have, for example, you have the kind of fast that a person fasts, let's say, for a tainus cholam or something. So he says you could maybe have distinctions over here when we're saying that Mabre Deravina would fast throughout the year. What it means is, certain of these kinds of fasts, yes, he would fast even on Shabbos. Because, for example, a tainus cholam, the halacha is you fast it even on Shabbos. The Ravid disagrees with certain parts of what the Baal HaMor is saying. He says what it means is not that he's fasting throughout the year. It means he had a regular practice of fasting Monday and Thursday. So Shabbos obviously is not in the picture anyway. But what it means is, in other words, in advance he would say, if any of these 3 days that we're listing comes out on Monday or Thursday, then I'll skip my fast that time, because if it's Shavuos, you have to eat Shavuos. If it's Purim, you have to eat Purim, etc. Any other days, any other Yom Tovim, he wouldn't exempt from that, and therefore he would fast. Part of the question is also, it comes out, part of the argument is the halacha, in fact, like Rabbi Eliezer, that you're allowed to have kulei lashem on the various Yom Tovim, or is the halacha, like Rabbi Yeshua, that you always have to have chetzi lashem v'chetzi lachem? So that also affects this question. And there's also, on top of that, you know, we said Rabba had said you're not allowed to fast on Shabbos. Vabre de Rabina, being an Amora, could disagree with that. So you have a few different permutations of what's going on here exactly. Anyway, but we do know that he made these three are exceptions: Shavuos, Purim, and Erev Yom Kippur. So Aseres, again, the reason is because Yom Shenitna by Torah, because we just said it's the day the Torah was given, and therefore you have to celebrate with food and drink to show that we're happy to have received the Torah and to bring down and then to be Mevarer. Puria, you may mishtav simcha ksiv. As far as Purim, again, we said it's because you may mishtav simcha, so therefore we have to eat on it. And Mala, Yom Kippur, why is it that he wouldn't fast on Erev Yom Kippur? The reason is, the Toni Chia Barav Midifti, because Chia Barav Midifti Torah Braisa, the Pasuk says, V'inissim Asnafshesechem B'sisha L'chodesh, you should afflict your souls, meaning that you should fast on the 9th of the month. So what do you mean? V'chi B'sisha Hei Mesanim, you don't fast on the 9th of Tishrei. V'alei B'astiri Mesanim, if the 10th is Yom Kippur. Ela, Loi Malach, comes to tell you, Kol Ha'oichel B'shoise B'tisha B'oi, if a person eats and drinks on the ninth day of Tishrei, Mala, all of our kosev, Kila Masana, Chiva Asiri, then the posit counts it for him, gives him a schus, as if he had fasted on the 9th and the 10th. So in other words, we see it's very important to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, and therefore, so even Mabre de Ravina wouldn't fast on that day. Again, whether he's fasting every day, whether he's fasting the Tainus Cholam, whether he's fasting Mondays and Thursdays, whatever it is, he wouldn't do that on Erev Yom Kippur. Rashi, by the way, points out, now there is a different day that's mentioned in Yuma and in other places in Shas that says that actually we learn a different thing from this Vesisha L'Chodesh Barav. We learn that you can't start the fasting and the Inuyim of Yom Kippur exactly when Yom Kippur begins. You have to have Tosfos Yom Kippur. You have to start a little bit early while it's still the ninth. So Rashi says that actually, Rashi says that actually not, I mean, you know, there is such a thing, but you could actually learn that from a different pasuk. So therefore, you have this word, Betisha, available over here to teach us about the importance of eating on the ninth. So the point is that's why Mabre de Ravina would eat on that day. Okay. Continuing on the topic of celebrating Shavuos, the Gemara says, Rav Yosef, b'yoma da'at sarta omar, on Shavuos, Rav Yosef would say, Abdi l'egla tilsa, make for me an egla tilsa, a third calf, which over here Rashi explains it means it was born third. In different other places, Rashi talks about different other possibilities, that it means it's one third of its growth, etc., etc. The point is that it was a very good quality animal. Especially to celebrate Shavuos. In fact, Marashah points out there's a further thing. Besides the fact that we're saying it's very good quality meat, it also represents all the threes that have to do with Matan Torah that the Gemara mentions in Shavuos. Moshe is the third child in his family. The Torah is composed of three parts, Torah, Nevi'im, Uksuvim. The Jewish people are composed of three parts. It was given on the third day, etc., etc. So therefore, an Egla Tilsa also symbolizes that. And Omar, he says, after all, I have to celebrate Shavuos. Eloi Hayyomit Kogorim. If it weren't for this day that caused this to happen, meaning Rashi says that I learned Torah and I became greater, Kama Yosef, Ikka B'Shuka, think of how many other people named Yosef there are in the marketplace, so I wouldn't be any more special than them, were it not for the fact that the Torah was given on that day, and I learned Torah and become greater with that. There's a couple of sichas where the Rebbe analyzes this. In one, the Rebbe talks about the idea. Now, we know famously there was the idea that before Matan Torah, they could learn Torah and keep mitzvahs as well. But their Torah and their mitzvahs weren't mashpia on the world. El yonim lo yod lamata, tachonim lo yad lamayla. There's a disconnect between heaven and earth. And only by Matan Torah was that taken away. So therefore, said Rabbi Yosef is saying, even before Matan Torah, there would have been the concept of Yosef of adding Kedusha in the world. But the world would be like a shuk, the world would be like a marketplace where there's no ability to actually bring Kedusha into it. Now that the Torah was taken away, then instead I'm able to accomplish the Hayyomid Kagorim. This day makes it possible now, it brings it about that now we're able to be poil on the world and on ourselves, that as Rashi says, I became greater, and therefore therefore we have to celebrate that day. That now the world is not just a shuk anymore. Now we're able to infuse it with Kedusha. And then if it goes on to explain in the Sikha over there why Dafka Rabbi Yosef is the one who came up with this, it has to do with the fact that Rabbi Yosef was blind and there's a question whether he's chayev in all the mitzvahs or not. It also has to do with the fact that Rabbi Yosef is Sinai, the expert in many different areas of Torah. And a long, long Sikha over there in Chelek Tesayin where they have analyzed in detail why Rabbi Yosef is the one who came up with this Kedush. And a different Sikha later on in Memtes, that I've also analyzed in a different way, that what Rabbi Yosef is saying is that this is the time when it made it possible to connect the world to Elikus. Where again, the idea is before Matan Torah, you had that disconnection, and now you're able to connect the world to Elikus, so therefore we have to celebrate it. Similarly, Rav Sheshes, Kol Tlosin Yomin Mahadolei Talmudei, Rav Sheshes would review all of his learning every 30 days, the Tully, and then he would lean the Koi the Ibrid the Dasha. He would stand there leaning against the hinge of the door, or actually Ibrid the Dasha actually is not the hinge, it's the bolt of the door. So he's standing there by the door, leaning against it. The Omar, and he would say, Chadoi nafshoi, Chadoi nafshoi, be happy, my neshama, be happy, my neshama, loch karoi, loch tanoi. It's for you that I learned Tanakh, and for you that I learned Mishnayos and Braises. I accomplished for you so much. Now why is he addressing his neshama that way? So again, there's a lot of different points. The Alter Rebbe first of all mentions in Tanya that when a person learns Torah in Perek Lamed Zayin, the Alter Rebbe talks about when a person learns Torah, he brings down a tremendous level of elikus to his neshama, much higher than he does to a mitzvah, and therefore Reb Sheshes is saying over here that my neshama should be happy. Not only I do mitzvahs, but I bring down even the greater gilui elikus that's brought down by learning Torah to my neshama. There's the idea that's brought in a number of places in Chassidus that, the idea is a person has to learn Torah b'simcha, so therefore he's mentioning the fact that my neshama should be happy that I'm learning Torah, because happiness is an essential thing in order to learn and absorb Torah. There's also, the Rebbe brings in a letter someplace that Rav Sheshes is actually a Gilgul of Bava ben Buta. In fact, you have Sheshes is the Atbash of Bava. Beis becomes Shin and Aleph becomes Tav. So Bava becomes Sheshes. And they actually had this in common. They were both blind. But the point is, therefore, now Bava ben Buta, being a tzaddik, he accomplished almost everything he needed to in this world. His neshama needed a little bit more, so therefore it was sent down again in Rav Sheshes. So therefore, the idea is, like Rav Sheshes' neshama is gaining from him being in the world a second time. His body is not really gaining much from it. When it comes to Ches HaMesim, which body is the neshama going to be more associated with? Bava ben Buta's body from a few hundred years earlier. So therefore, if Sheshes is saying to my neshama, be happy, in other words, fine, body, you don't have much what to be happy about because we're not here in the world primarily for you. But the neshama is accomplishing great things and you can be happy about it. Because after all, because the neshama accomplished, he was mevara, the body of Bava ben Buta, so therefore the neshama. I mean, you have fine. Rav Sheshes is obviously going to have Tchias HaMesim as well, but the main neshama over there was going to be associated with Bava ben Buta, who it belonged to originally. When you have a regular person who comes back in a Gilgul, where maybe the first time around they completely messed up and the neshama wasn't mevara their body at all, so then fine, a major part of the neshama can be more in the second body, and the second body gains from the fact that it has this neshama in it. Because now the person is doing mitzvahs with it. But in the case of Bava ben Buta and of Sheshes, where he already accomplished so much, there's very little that of Sheshes still has to finish up. So therefore the gain is more for the original, is more for the neshama rather than for the new body. So therefore he's saying, Chadori nafshoi, my neshama, be happy. So the Gemara says, Aini, is that so? You're saying that a person learns Talmud Torah and the gain is only for himself? If it weren't for the Torah, the heaven and earth wouldn't continue to exist. If it weren't for my covenant by day and by night, which means the Torah, which is learned by day and by night, I wouldn't have set up the laws of heaven and earth. So what is Rav Shesha saying? My neshama, be happy that you're learning Torah. What do you mean, his neshama? It benefits the whole world. The answer is fine, but originally, when a person starts out, he's doing it for his own benefit. Now, not to be makabel pras, fine, I'll tell you kabbalim, I'm a shamash nesedav, I'm a nasakabel pras, but he's first focusing on the gili alakus that he gets for his neshama. Afterwards, he thinks about the effect that it has on the world at large. So therefore, Rav Sheshes is saying the same thing, that first let's focus on the great advantage that learning Torah gives to my neshama, the gili or that it brings to it. Afterwards, we can talk about what it accomplishes for the world as a whole. Okay. So we digress from this because we were talking about Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua about the argument about whether Simchas Yom Tov is a mitzvah or a shuas. So that led us into this piece of Haggadah. So tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, we'll continue with the analysis of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua's opinions in the Mishnah and what comes of that, in terms of whether you're able to do these things that are also d'rabbanan in order to bring the Korban Pesach or not. That's what we're holding on Rav Ashi.